Hey there, everybody, it's Phil. Now, before we get this podcast started, I wanted to talk to you real quick about these advertisements. You know that we have great advertisements, and you know that we have great advertisers who support the show and keep it free for you. One of the reasons these advertisers love Android Central so much is that they know the show has amazing listeners. That's you guys. So once a year, we like to run a listener survey to help demonstrate this to those advertisers. Right now, we have an all-new survey that I would love for you to take for us so that these advertisers can learn more about you guys, the audience. Just do me a favor, go to podsurvey.com/android. It takes 5 minutes. We're going to ask you some questions about yourself and what you like to buy, and it's completely anonymous. Nobody's tracking anything, where you're going and all that. So your answers will help us find new advertisers who are well-matched to you, your interests, and the show. When you're finished, you can enter a monthly drawing to win a $100 Amazon gift card. So thanks again for doing that. Just go to podsurvey.com/android. Here now, the podcast.
Hey there, everybody. Welcome to the Android Central Podcast. We think.
Maybe.
It's episode 239 for Friday, June 5th. And this is going to be another fun one. So I'm Phil Nicholson. Hi. I'm going to be really messed up on this show because a few things have gone on. When I got back from San Francisco, I had to rearrange my office. They wanted to put in some new carpet. So I took everything out and hosed it down and put everything back in. And because that wasn't, you know, uprooting enough, I'll point the camera down there so you can see it. I went and bought this fancy thing over there to try to make the podcast sound really good, and I'm pretty sure I had it working 10 minutes ago, but now it's not working. I don't know what I did, so that's not working. I'm using this tiny little microphone, which actually is a really good mic. I'm facing the wrong way, and I got three yahoos giving me a hard time about it, so welcome to the show.
It's gonna be that just time. Trying to give you some motivation.
Give me something. So I'm just gonna hold the mic like this and just,
you know, it's got a little tripod mount on it. If you had a mini tripod, you could perch it up close.
And I have no idea where it is actually.
Of course, if you didn't have to uproot your whole entire office earlier this week, then maybe you'd know where it is.
Worst yet is that I cleaned, and I knew where everything was until I cleaned. So yeah, now I have no idea where.
Every hoarder has a system.
Exactly. That's why I keep telling my wife. So, if it's your first time watching us, I'm going to be looking in all the wrong places. And I've got this giant printer hanging over my head there I got to do something with. So, welcome to Friday.
Office environment there with the printer.
Yeah. Now I'm a corporate Joan. Andrew Martinick, everybody.
With, you know, my normal audio, video, non-printer setup.
Jerry says the camera's not switching to me when I talk.
No, sir.
Maybe I'm not loud enough.
Switching for me. I am not watching the live feed, though.
Yeah, I don't know. Oh, see, it switched now. Switch for me, anyway. Okay. Alex Dobie. He's not here. He's on an airplane.
He hasn't been here for a while.
I haven't seen Alex in
2 weeks.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure he's on his way home, so it's somewhere over Asia right now.
No one knows what's going to happen on Monday when he joins the Hangout.
I just hope that he's on his way to Bangkok with the company credit card.
Russell Hawley, that's who that is right there.
Definitely not Alex Dobie.
And the birthday boy, Jerry Hildenbrand.
Yay! I'm 29.
No, you're not! Not at all! So, when last we spoke, Jerry and I were actually in the same room, which happens once a year.
Yep.
Probably for good reason. San Francisco survived. Oh, excuse me. I need a nap. It's a long, hard day of breaking things today. I keep looking at this microphone that's up here, too, and like trying to use it. Maybe I'll just leave it there.
It's just a prop now.
It looks better, yeah.
Duct tape the tiny microphone to the big one.
That's how the pros do it in radio.
Actually, I can totally clip it to it. Let's see.
Oh, that's right.
This podcast just gets better and better all the time.
Yeah. that doesn't look janky at all. But it keeps getting in the right spot.
Get some gaffer's tape on there to really put together the pro experience.
Oh, man.
Can we put like a Logitech camera on top of all of that?
Yes. Yes, we can. It looks something like this. Whoa!
The Phil Vision.
If you're not watching the video from this week's show, well, you're not missing out, but you are missing out. Okay, so seriously, we should talk about Android or something at this point. When last we spoke, we were at Google I/O, and kind of, it was the night after the keynote. We hadn't really had time to digest things. So why don't we digest things? Where do you guys want to start? I want to start with Google Photos, because to me, that's kind of been the biggest consumer-y thing normal people can play. I mean, it was the only normal thing people can play with, really. Normal people can play with. Where do we stand on that? Andrew, I've had you kind of poking holes in this thing all week. Give me for people who haven't tried Google Photos yet, give me the 60-second spiel on it.
I mean, I kind of jumped on it personally from just a I like photos kind of standpoint, but basically this is just Google Plus Photos minus the Google Plus part, and they made just a solid version revision in terms of features and interface and how it all works. So if you're not familiar with Google Photos or Google Plus Photos up to this point, then basically it's just a cross-device upload every photo you ever take anywhere and access it pretty much anywhere kind of service.
Easy enough, right?
Right. Except for then it works great if you don't ask many questions about what it's doing.
I'm very much the same way.
It's very much a Google kind of thing to do. Like they're very much saying, trust us, give us all of this, all of your photos, and then trust that we're going to be good stewards of all that data, and then we're going to give you these features. Like all of this search stuff and categorization, you can view them anywhere on the web, you can share them easily, things like that. But in standard Google fashion, you're not entirely sure what's going on with this free upload. So you can upload photos with a 16 megapixel limit, they say, where you used to have a 4 megapixel limit on Google Plus Photos, which is kind of low. 16 is very much acceptable, and only a few phones have larger sensors than that. But they keep saying things like very similar to high quality printing sizes. And they say high quality, but they don't say what happens if you upload a photo that's under 16 megapixels, or what exactly they're doing when you view it on a phone. Obviously, you're viewing a smaller version because they don't expect you to be, pinching and zooming in on, individual pixels. But then when you view it on the web, you're viewing a larger version because there aren't storage concerns.
Well, and a megapixel isn't a unit of not, well, I mean, it's a unit of measurement, but it's not a
unit of quality necessarily.
Well, I mean, I can have a, 16 million pixels that are huge, right? And it's not, yeah, I mean, it's not file size. It's not.
Right. And what we've seen before is that Google really likes this WebP image format that does compresses images a lot without losing a lot of quality. And so I don't think they're doing something necessarily with converting everything to WebP or anything like that, but they're clearly showing you lower resolution versions on your phone when you tap into a photo that was taken a year and a half ago that's obviously not stored locally on your device. So they're doing a lot of interesting background server stuff so that they can offer you, free unlimited storage without having to upload full-size versions of all your photos without any restrictions.
Now, I read on the internet that Google's going to steal all your pictures and sell them to advertisers.
Right.
There is a terms of service for this that lets you know exactly what rights they have, correct?
Yeah, of course. And just like every other photo service, when right. You upload to Flickr, you upload to Apple Photos, you upload anywhere, Google's not pulling a Flickr where they just randomly said that we own all your photos all of a sudden, which Flickr backed off of that really, really, really quickly. But of course, they have to be able to look at those photos. Now, that doesn't mean there's some guy in Mountain View, like on a computer flicking through your photos going, look at that, it's a funny photo. It's they're processing them on a server to look at, common places and things and objects and people and things like that. Mm-hmm.
Right, and people don't realize they need rights to republish your photos so they can show you a thumbnail.
And to be able to share a link to a photo and things like that.
They have to have publishing rights to do that, and it doesn't. I don't think they want to steal all my pictures.
No, and I don't think there's any value in Google selling or stealing your photos either. So,
well, not ours, but
no. But there is one. I mean, we can get into a little bit some of our issues with the service, but there are there are shortcomings in the service too. But on the highest level, this is a great replacement of Google Plus Photos. You don't need a Google Plus account anymore. The Photos app is a standalone app on your phone or tablet, or your iPhone or iPad as well. And it's not tied into the Google Plus app anymore. You can disable the Google Plus app if you want. Before, Google Plus Photos was just kind of this stub app that just took you into the Google Plus app. So that's separate. Your backup settings are all part of your Google settings tied into Google Play services. So that's all separate as well. And that was a big problem before, is that it was kind of tied into Google Plus, and it's not completely gone yet. Anybody who's had Google Plus auto backup turned on before has all of these pictures that were shared on Hangouts or shared on Google Plus, and they're kind of
messed in there,
semi-permanently in your Google Photos library. That's just something that's kind of tacked on. So is having Google Drive photos in your Google Photos library. And I wish that Google would just kind of go all in on one of these services. And it looks like they're leaning towards just putting them all in Drive and letting you have control over some of them at some point. But I think that, especially if you've never used Google Plus Photos, if you start from day one with Google Photos, you're going to have a really good experience, because you're not going to have all this leftover cruft from old versions.
All those memes I sent you.
I've had to go and clear them all.
Yeah.
Clear them all out. Well, the funny thing was that you can search for screenshots on, the search feature is really great, and it'll pull up anything that you ask for, really. You could search for screenshots and it'll catch like 80% of them. But you still have that other 20% that are just a bunch of leftover crap that you really don't want in there. And it's taking up storage if, like me, you don't really care because you have 500 gigs of Google Drive storage, but you do care from the standpoint of, like, this folder is now 12 gigs and probably half of it is crap.
Well, can't necessarily just go back and clean everything out either, because if you did a big confusing post on what happens if you, quote, delete a
file. Now, not confusing, my explanation was, I think, necessarily confusing, because Google doesn't tell you what happens.
It's that whole, don't worry about it, we'll take care of it sort of thing. And my thing was, when you delete an image, it can delete it even if if you put it in a Google Plus post. Well, I don't necessarily want to see it in this big thing of all my pictures. I want to get rid of that Google Plus stuff.
Right. I think that eventually we're going to get there. I mean, right now, I completely agree with you. If you share a photo to Facebook, you want the ability to just delete it locally and have that Facebook post stand with the photo there. That's why you sent it there. You don't want this symbolic link between something you shared on Google Plus and having that item in your photos gallery to look at forever. I mean, a lot of these social posts that you send out aren't, forever pictures that you care about. You're putting it up there and it can live on Facebook, but you don't want to have to look at it every time you search, for cars or something like that. And the confusing part is, like you said, Google doesn't really say what happens when you delete a photo in Google Photos. So you go on the web, and because you can access them anywhere, it doesn't indicate where a photo is. You could take a photo on your G4, it instantly uploads to Google Photos, and then you could view it on your Nexus 7, and it really views as if that's on your Nexus 7 locally and lets you delete it. And the problem is, then it will be removed from your G4, and guess what? It's going to be removed locally from the G4 as well. It's going to actually pull it out of your local storage and kill it. So you really have to be careful with that.
And it warns you that it's going to do it, but it doesn't give you the option.
No, it says kind of confusingly, like, it'll be removed from all your devices. Well, you're like, well, yeah, it's synced to all my devices. Of course it'd be removed. But the problem is that on Android, you may have multiple gallery apps installed. If you have like I did the G4, the Photos app doesn't work well as a gallery connected to the camera. So you're still using the second gallery app and you go to view that photo locally and now it's not there. So I think that these are improvements that, Google, maybe, you know, when we hit one version 1.5 or 2.0 or something like that, we'll have a little more control over that. I just don't think people, especially with something like Photos, which is very personal, are ready to give up the control of knowing where they are.
That was another thing as we started dumping in gigabytes and gigabytes of, pictures we already have. I have in a couple different places. I mean, we always say, look, you should store your files in like, what, three places, you know, one local device, one backup storage device, and then in the cloud at a bare minimum. Mm-hmm. So I've had a network attached storage box in my living room for years now. It's an old HP box. It actually worked really well until I got back from San Francisco, apparently. And it's breaking like everything else. I've had this thing for 6-7 years at least. So I hooked that, you know, volume up on my Mac and just dumped all of those pictures into Google Photos. Now, by the way, when you do that, it actually does the entire volume and not just the folders you want, so I had to stop it very quickly. That brings up another point. You have a couple ways of uploading photos, right? You have that bulk uploader desktop tool, mm-hmm. which is really good, but you can also just drag things on there.
Yeah, the website has a little button, or you can just drag and drop things in there. Obviously, I mean, I have a really fast upload speed on my internet, so I just drag and dropped like 8,000 pictures and it uploaded in less than an hour or something like that. But for a lot of people, you're not going to be able to drag and drop 8,000 photos and then keep that tab open for a day or two. You know, you're bound to close it halfway through or something like that. So Google made an uploader that's really meant to be an automatic uploader going forward. So it can, just like Google Drive, sit on your computer, watch your pictures folder, watch your desktop, or watch for certain cameras or certain SD cards. And then so as soon as you plug in your SD card from a specific camera, it starts uploading those automatically to Google Photos. And what you can do is for your first upload, point it at a specific folder that's, you know, backup photos from previous years. And then you can get all those up there to start.
This sounds like a lot of work.
So, it really wasn't, I don't think.
It's kind of the, like I said, if you're starting fresh, like you've never taken a picture before in your life and you're starting fresh with Google Photos, it's going to work really great because more and more photos are being taken with our phones, and auto backup on the phone is as easy as just installing the app and it's already enabled by default and it's uploading. If you're like me or Phil, Jerry, Russell, I'm sure you have all kinds of different ways to manage your photos. I use Dropbox folders, and then I mirror those to Google Drive to have a backup, and then I store them on my desktop on a separate hard drive as a backup. And I use Lightroom for all my categorization of my photos from my separate cameras, but I don't import my phone photos into Lightroom. So I've got all these different places where I store them, and you know, I've got a hoarder system, just like Phil's office. But this is very much like, just let everything happen and, you know, manage it later. Like, upload everything, go on, upload everything, and then you can delete later and everything like that. Now, that is not the way I'm ever going to do it, but that's the way they're positioning it to work.
You know, the most difficult thing for me is I'm used to a structured hierarchy of folders.
Absolutely.
If you go look in my photo library, you'll see folders that say, like, LOL or family or... I lose that when I move them all to Google Photos, and I'm not sure how I'm going to handle that because I get twitchy when things change.
And Google trades that for chronological order.
Yeah.
And great search.
Yeah, and don't discount that, especially on a mobile device, on a tablet or a phone. Just being able to flip through years like that is pretty incredible. I mean, I immediately went to the end and found, you know, all the stuff from before my kids were born and, you know, honeymoon stuff.
Yeah.
And then all the stuff that didn't have dates on it is now in June 2015, which is also interesting.
Yeah, I had a folder that was made, a 1970 folder for some reason, that something had a weird date on it, and now it's, you know, there's no way to really change that.
I've got a print of a picture that was taken in 1861. I'm going to mess with the EXIF and make sure that the date is 1861 and see what Google Photos does.
And so that is the most interesting thing, like Phil said, that you can just find anything pretty much, which is the big thing that I thought about. You know, I was like, well, I don't really need this because I use Dropbox auto upload. And hey, look, I can just have a list of JPEGs chronologically and I can just go back through them. Problem is, you can never find those in a short period of time if you want to reference something. You know, I put this on Google Plus that I was talking to somebody about different baseball stadiums. We were talking about Safeco, and I brought up that we went to Wrigley when we were in Chicago. And I just pull up in Photos, I type in Wrigley Field, and I see every single photo from Wrigley Field. And, you know, they're not local. It takes 5 seconds and they're all there as long as you have an internet connection. And that's really huge. I mean, you can complain about how it sorts things and duplicate photos and things like that, but never before was I able in 5 seconds to pull open 25 photos that I had never, you know, had no idea where they were.
What's the weirdest search, Russell, that you've done? Like, have you... That you can speak about publicly.
The weirdest one that I've done was I guess one of the first things that I saw people sharing was the ability to search for different meat types in pictures that you had taken. Because I mean, like, all of us take pictures of food, and like I typed in the word steak, and sure enough, there was a whole bunch of pictures of a ton, and it was mostly right. I mean, it was surprising. I think more than that, though, is the ability to just click in the search field and have all of those pre-sorted options show up immediately underneath. I've lost hours already scrolling through those.
Oh my God.
Some of the things that have come from just clicking on the search thing and letting it auto-populate on nothing.
Are you doing it right now, Jerry?
Yeah, I just did a search for spare ribs. I'm hungry now.
You should search for meat and see what comes up.
Not on my computer. That and tentacles are two things you don't want to search for.
Wow, what was that?
It was a helicopter.
They're coming to get me.
They are coming.
I love how it has been automatically creating new, and I think we just put the story up today, Andrew, of Auto Awesome and where it stands.
Yeah, Auto Awesome just disappeared in name, but stuck around in functionality. So it's now called Creations, which makes a lot more sense. Auto Awesome didn't at all indicate what it was doing, other than like that it would be awesome and it would happen automatically. But now Creations are these things, all the things you know, get collages, enhanced photos, and you know it puts on filters and borders and things, movies and stories. You know, stories was this big thing when it hit Google Plus, but now, not only do those happen automatically when you import things and it turns on them, you can also just make them manually whenever you want. You can create a collage, or you can manually stitch together a story. You don't have to wait 3 or 4 hours for the server-side stuff to happen.
It's been really interesting to see what it would make. I got some great ones. My kids, when they were babies, I got blasted first thing with, you know, remember, it's pulling in 6,000 pictures, so there's all sorts of stuff there you don't remember taking. I got blasted with some very not safe for work pictures of my wife when she was pregnant, because, you know, you do pregnancy pictures and stuff. And it's like, oh, hello. It's going to be really interesting to see how that's handled over time. I would love to see some sort of privacy features on this and just be like, hey, don't ever show this batch of pictures without a password or something.
Yeah, I mean, that...
Especially with things on so many devices and so many places now, right?
Right. Of course, all the photos are private, but then, of course, you have this new level of when you can access every single photo you've ever associated with your account from anywhere, you could accidentally get some things, or you know, you get false positives on searches and stuff like that, you know, when you're trying to show Wrigley Field.
It's going to make me a lot more careful, you know, who I hand my device to, I think, or letting people use photos versus a gallery app, actually.
Right.
That's a good point. You can't protect the photos application. So
Right. Next
year in San Francisco, if I grab your phone and pick it up, you're going to have to reach over and snatch it away from me and say, no, bad dog, because I potentially can see things that you don't want me to see.
Can you do it? Does
I've got the G4 in my hand now. I'm trying to remember if it has private apps. The GSX does, doesn't it?
Yeah,
The G4 does too, but it's, I think, folders. Yeah. They're predefined.
The GS6 issue is that you can use Knox to privatize an entire app, or you can use their private mode to just hide certain photos within specific Samsung apps. So it's not really applicable to something like
the Right, Google because app. The Photos apps is pulling from the web, not from your device.
So right.
You so have can't to block do anything that, about that. The app, not the content. Google, you know, we need to hide pictures.
Yeah, I think that's just an example of a lot of different basic functionalities that are missing here. Sharing is still very funky. If you use it on the phone, you can just share a specific image or a collage or multiple images. You could share them out to Twitter or Facebook or just share them anywhere because they just are just files. It'll download the file and share it out. On the web, if you share anywhere but Google+, it's sharing a link. So you're just getting a goo.gl/photos link, and you know Facebook will import it with like a thumbnail, but then you're still clicking to view it. Twitter doesn't know what to do with it. Nothing else knows what to do with that link. So the nice part is that it's viewable. It's viewed exactly the same way as you would view it locally, except for people don't necessarily like clicking on links just to get that 3-second payoff of looking at an image. They would rather just see it in line. And so there's a big disparity between how the website handles things and how the app handles things, and the website very much is behind on that point and many others.
That's not to say it's not going to get better.
No, it's a website. Google is going to iterate the crap out of it.
Real quick, so we can get off these things. Give me like 5 reasons why somebody should use Google Photos over Flickr or over whatever other service you might be using. And do you think you're going to stick with it?
I mean, not necessarily in terms of importance, but just what I think. The fact that you can view them anywhere, especially on the web. I mean, honestly, you'd be able to just go to photos.google.com on any web browser, you know, you're showing your family members or something, and show any of these photos off is a huge bonus. Second of all, having access to every photo for yourself, even when they're not locally stored in your device, you know, you can scroll back, say, I want to look at this photo from 2013, and you instantly have it. I also think that the fact that you can auto backup from a computer and also from your phones and your tablets, you know, not everybody is taking pictures with a dedicated camera, but if you are, they can instantly upload them as if it were, you know, internet connected on its own. And then also, I think that the editing features, while they're not as good as Google+ as used to be, you can make basic tweaks. If you have Snapseed installed on your phone, you can send a photo directly to Snapseed to be edited from the menu, which is nice. It'd be nice if Snapseed, all those functions were just built in. But on top of the automatic stuff where you can create stories, you can create collages, and they're all just really simple to put together. You don't need a separate app to put together collages or video or anything like that on your phone. So I'm going to keep trying it. I've uploaded probably 15,000 photos or something in the last couple days. I moved all my Dropbox backups over there, so they're all in there. And I'm trying to use it as much as I can. I still have some issues, but not enough to make me stop at this point.
I'm pretty stoked with it. I think if this was a paid service just for the service itself, I would totally use it.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm definitely paying for it indirectly in that I'm uploading at original quality forever. Sure. I'm not using the free high-quality one, so it's all coming out of my drive storage. But right now, I've uploaded, you know, thousands and thousands and thousands. My drive folder for Google Photos is only 11 gigs, so it's not that much of an expense. You know, that if you had nothing else in Drive, still comes underneath your 15 gig free allotment. And geez, you can get 100 gigs for $2 a month.
Russell and Jerry, are you at all worried about the, and we, you know, we saw Apple's CEO go off on stuff, and we've seen every Apple pundit, strangely enough, say the exact same things only before he said them. It's almost as if there's a conspiracy here to contribute to the narrative. But, I mean, are you guys worried in any way, shape, or form about this?
No. Google has too much to lose by doing something stupid like everybody is claiming that they're going to do. It's not going to happen.
What about you, Russell?
You missed it earlier. I can search by steak.
oh, back to the meat.
Nobody else can do that right now, and that's because Google's algorithms are working the way that they're working. And to do that, they have to pay a little closer attention to the images, and they have to do things a little differently. I think that the end result, even if there was any kind of security gap, which there's not. I mean, your personal information is going to remain your personal information. You're getting way more out of it by just kind of sitting back and letting Google do its thing.
Have you tried searching for butt?
I'm going to right now, right? Just because you said so.
Yep. I'm just saying, I went through the, you know, very juvenile stuff that you would totally expect one of us to do.
Ooh, and, we can't
only
show
three
that.
Pictures.
Really?
And none of them are actually butts.
I have nothing for butt.
Oh, I got a dog butt. A dog.
I'm using other words anyway that I can't repeat. Nope, can't be showing that page either.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is neat.
I'm searching for all sorts of things that we can't show on this podcast.
You all go ahead and do the podcast. I'm going to be busy for a bit.
Anyway, I'm really pretty stoked by this. I think it's great. Really cool.
Yeah, I don't think that if you were going to be worried about the privacy implications of having Google have your data, you should have been worried a long time before photos. I think the funniest part is that if somebody's going to get upset about photos but continue to use Gmail, then you're way off a base.
I completely agree with the stories. You know, we've seen a bunch of editorials this week saying this really just goes to show how far behind Apple is in that, you know, in services versus hardware. And
Apple really tried to push their photo service, which does very similar things in terms of, you know, uploading all of your photos, putting device-specific, you know, more compressed versions on your phone and things like that, except for you hit your iCloud photo storage limit at 5 gigs, which is also shared with everything else that you do, and which means that you hit it in like 3 weeks and then you're done. There's no option to upload, you know, compressed or high-quality versions for free. You know, I gladly pay for Google Drive storage to be able to store these at full quality. But the pricing actually makes sense, and there's a free version if you want that.
I think...
Go ahead.
The blanket terms of service over your data in Google spells it right out in plain English. We, you know, promise never to sell any of your data to any advertising company or other third party. Apple and Microsoft says the exact opposite, that they may sell your data to specific third parties, and both have done it to Yahoo. People that freak out that what Google's going to do, I think they just need to settle down and look at what has been done and look at how all these terms are worded. Google makes too much money off of your data to share it with anyone. They don't, you know, it's not that they love you so much they're going to keep you safe. It's they lose money if they sell your data. So it's just not going to happen.
I go back to, you know, if you haven't read Renee Ritchie's kind of just hit piece that I disagree with on many levels. But I go back to the founder's letter. Go back and read the founder's letter that Sergey and Larry wrote at the time of the IPO, and read that. And I think most people can decide for themselves if Google truly is trying to organize data and do really friggin' awesome things with it, or if they're just trying to take you out back and empty your pockets. I think too many people have been forgetting that lately. And that's not to say that they're never going to cross that don't be evil line, because at the end of the day, Google's still a company, and companies occasionally do things that we disagree with. But I'm just floored by Google Photos. It really comes down to that.
And I think it also comes down to the fact that, like you said, it's so far ahead of what Apple is offering in its photo service. And it's also free if you want to use it for free. So, I mean, people aren't jumping into this and saying, oh, I don't even care what happens to my photos. You can just publish those anywhere. No, people are saying, I understand the situation. I read the terms of service, or I read what somebody else said about the terms of service, and I'm continuing to use it because I don't think that's a threat, and it's a fantastic service that's way, way better than what you can get elsewhere.
At this point, everyone really understands that in the right situations, open source software is important technology. It's useful and powerful. No one really disagrees with that. I mean, the most successful open source project of all time is a little thing called the internet. Tim Berners-Lee put the www in the public domain. Then, of course, there's Berkeley Unix, TCP/IP, BSD Linux, Android, the Internet of Things. You get the picture. The only real disagreement is whether open source can be used in an enterprise situation to do their most important work. But Red Hat has been settling this debate one customer at a time for more than a decade. They started with Red Hat Enterprise Linux, and today they certify and support application development, storage, and cloud infrastructure for every conceivable enterprise deployment. The New York Stock Exchange, DreamWorks, each and every airline, healthcare company, and telecom giant, and the Fortune Global 500, they all rely on Red Hat. In fact, more than 90% of all the companies in the Fortune 500 are Red Hat customers. Why? Because they get the powerful, constantly improving innovation of open source without the risk of having to do it alone. It's that simple. Red Hat, enterprise software trusted in the world's most demanding data centers. Find out what they can do for you at redhat.com.
I do want to move off photos a little bit. We just talked about it a lot. I get that. But there is other stuff going on. The Android M developer preview, we're starting to make our way through a little bit. You know, I don't want us going all balls out on it because it's a subset of a subset, and chances are, if you're the type of person who's going to install this thing, you can find your own way around it. But there is some good stuff in there. I think Russell's doing a nice job of going through it slowly and methodically. And Jerry did the really nice APIs in plain English post, which, I don't know, I mean, we kind of straddle a line. It's tough to explain some of this stuff in plain English, right, Jerry, just mm-hmm. because of the nature of it. But there's a lot of really interesting stuff coming in M that I think I've been thinking about it more in updates to devices. And just how that's still not good enough. And how many people are going to miss out on this stuff? And actually, Jerry, the other thing I thought about, you were off yesterday for your birthday. But do we have a clear differentiation of what's going to be API at the OS level and what's going to be made available through Google Play services?
Well, kind of, sort of. I mean, I think everything we've written about so far is our APIs at the operating system level, but some of those things are going to require Google Play services to actually make them work.
The we kind of went back and forth on a little bit the other day was the automatic backups.
Right.
Because they use Google Drive. Google Drive. So where does that fit in? And
you're going to have Google apps and Google services on your phone for a developer to actually leverage it. But the API is still exposed in the operating system and will probably be in the source code. You know, we don't have a clear-cut picture, no, but I think most of the new features we talk about, we will have access to see how it works, even if we can't use them without Google Play services.
All right. Russell, anything else in M you want to talk about today?
Doze works really well.
Really?
If of the things that I've seen that I've been hesitant to talk about because nothing in M is set in stone, Doze is by far the most impressive thing, especially for Android tablets or for people who leave their phones on their desk for, you know, several hours a day. I have my housemate, you know, he leaves his phone in a cubby before he goes into a secure facility for, you know, 9 hours a day, and when he gets out, you know, if a random service has tapped his phone for 6 hours or 8 hours, then, you know, he's done literally nothing with his phone and lost it all day. And Doze is going to make that never happen. It's a series of services that will, you know, just shut down things like wake locks and, you know, specific calls that would normally wake a phone up in order to do things like Wi-Fi sync and stuff like that. If it notices that your phone is completely immobile for certain periods of time, with very few exceptions. And I think that that's going to be a huge deal in the next version. It is by far the user-facing feature that I am most excited about.
Now, I've had people that had several questions. Google Cloud Messaging still stays alive and works while your phone is dozing, correct? So you're going to get a push message.
Sort of. It is a specific kind of Google Cloud message pushing. It's their tickles, which is a silly name for right. It's a silly name for very specific kinds of low energy or low data pushes. So like if someone sends you
a high priority.
So like E911 messages. You know, are the same kind. They're not through Google Push. They're through an E911 service. But, like, that is something that is dubbed a high priority. So, like, if someone sends you a message through Hangouts or something like that, then it's not gonna interrupt Doze. But there are some high-priority tickles. I should find a list of what exactly those are.
Right, because, I mean, the examples that I've been given is, I don't want Doze if it means my wife is in a car accident and sends me a text and my phone doesn't tell me. And I agree.
That is true, and that's something that I'm working on trying to test.
Yeah.
To see how exactly that would work. Well, so text messages, it's also important to keep in mind that Doze is only able to handle things that are intangible to the dialer mechanic. Phone calls and regular text messages and MMS messages and stuff, that's an entirely separate subsystem that Google can't screw around with. There's, like, regulations for that. They can't mess with those. So, like, regular text messages and stuff won't be through. But if you have, like, a database messaging service, then that may actually be a concern.
Like Google Voice.
Google Voice can piggyback on SMS networks, so that may not be a problem for everyone, but... Yeah, if it's a data-only messaging service, then that is a legit concern right now. But it's also an unfinished product, so there's no reason to freak out about it yet.
And
so,
that's been my blanket answer. Let's discuss how it works for now, but keep in mind that they're testing it.
Right.
Doze is separate from this function that they talked about where if an app goes unused for like a period of 2 days, then it also gets kind of put in a hibernation state, right?
Right, that's an app-based thing for if you have, because there are some applications like Dropbox. If you're not actively using Dropbox to back stuff up or to do stuff, it still pretty regularly pings the Dropbox database to make sure that things haven't changed, and that's only really important to you when you open the Dropbox app.
Mm-hmm.
So to have it regularly ping like that is not really necessary. So that function. Will work kind of like Doze, on an app-by-app basis and just make it use less battery by making it, ping less.
And I think they use the example of you install a game and then you forget that you installed the game and 3 days later it's still sitting in the background like pulling down new data for advertising or new data for leaderboards or whatever, and you don't really need that happening, and that's, fractions of your battery, but over the course of 2 days, and if you have 4 apps that you haven't looked at, or in some of our cases, 25 apps that you haven't looked at in several days, like those don't need to be waking up the phone or connecting to a network. And right. that could be 5 or 10% more battery at the end of the day.
I wanted Andrew to talk a little bit about NVIDIA Shield. Just because,
the Shield TV.
Yeah, the Shield TV.
Which is back over there.
I'm gonna go to Andrew's house after the podcast. I want one of these really badly.
We're working hard to get Russell one too, because he has the other consoles and things like that to make good comparisons. But I went into I reviewed the Shield Android TV after Simon took a look at it at GDC when, it kind of came out of nowhere. So it's But since then, we kind of felt like we knew all of the details. But the interesting thing for me is I didn't have to ever struggle along with the Nexus Player, which my understanding from Phil's talking about it is slow, not a lot of storage, kind of meh. Whereas this is the Shield Android TV is super powerful. Comes with a really good controller that can handle lots of games. And... It handles anything that you throw at it. And it kind of seems like So at $199 is kind of expensive for kind of a secondary TV box for some people. You know, people are used to this $99 kind of point for a Roku or an Apple TV, or now the Nexus Player is $79, which I think Russell mentioned was like that's the proper price for a Nexus Player. So you're talking about $199 is kind of a lot, but for anybody that reads Android Central or is watching or listening to this podcast, you're going to see the value in $199 for, you know, local gaming is really good. It's extremely powerful. It's far more powerful than even like the Shield tablet in console mode, which you used to be able to plug it into a TV and have it be kind of like a set-top box. But it also, you know, handles these Wi-Fi controllers for low latency input. It handles Bluetooth peripherals, handles USB peripherals. It works with surround sound systems. It works with HDMI CEC to control your TV and vice versa. I mean, it does all of these things that you want it to do when it's in your entertainment center. And I mean, I don't necessarily think it's you know, unplug your Xbox One kind of thing. If you're really into those title, you know, AAA titles on your Xbox and things like that. But from all the media stuff standpoint, it definitely can do that. And it's small compared to a PS4 or an Xbox One.
$200 versus a 90, or actually it's less than $99 now, right? Yeah, the Nexus Player. Yeah, I mean, the Nexus, yeah. Nexus Player is still just kind of like there for me. Now, Google Play Store getting opened up this week with a whole lot more games. I showed my kids this morning that they could play Hungry Shark on it, and they're basically like, screw you, Dad. See you in like a week. We're
gonna go. Yeah, I think that in terms of games, I mean, if you're going to go for games, this is going to be the one to get, the Shield Android TV, because NVIDIA has quite a few games that are exclusive to NVIDIA devices. And then they also do the Grid game streaming service, which I've been really, really happy with. So, you know, in terms of games, that, you know, and the fact that you can do multiple controllers, and it, you know, the nice thing is you can game on a full-size TV with this controller. It's all wireless, and you can plug headphones into the controller, and you can have your own experience, you know, things like that that you're just not getting from other devices, on top of the fact that it'll run any game that's in Google Play dramatically better than what the little processor in the Nexus Player can run.
And the pro version comes with Borderlands 2, the pre-sequel.
Yes.
That's...
for only $100 more.
Yep.
Which I don't know how... I know that's still waiting to come to Google Play. I don't know how much that's going to be on its own, but it's probably not going to be cheap. You know, that's one thing you can say is that NVIDIA is working to bring some of these games, you know, older but still really good games that just weren't possible to run on, you know, tablets or phones before. But they're not cheap. I mean, you're going to be spending, you know, $499 is kind of the bottom end, and then you're talking about $999, $1499, some $20 games, which is a lot for some people when they're talking about Android. They don't think about it, but these are like games that were on, or still are on, Steam for the same prices to run on your computer. So,
welcome to the world of AAA games.
Right, you can take it seriously.
There, money.
There are real games with tens of hours of gameplay in them available. You know, and you're talking. I think Talos Principle was like $5 up front to play the three out of the 12 worlds or something, and then you can unlock the other worlds for $15 or something, so $20 all in. But it's like, that was a game where $5, I played for like 4 hours to hit the point where I had to buy the rest of the levels. You know, that's getting a lot for your money. And like I said, again, these are games that couldn't run on a lower powered box anyway.
Should I buy one?
Yes, one of the pro models, and have it shipped to West Virginia.
So that's interesting. In that pro model, also besides having Borderlands, the pre-sequel is 500 gig hybrid drive, where it's got the small flash storage to hold local, you know, quickly accessible stuff, and then a spinning hard drive for the rest. You get in some laptops have those, and it's like 500 gigs, really hard to fill that up. But if you do, you can plug a 2 terabyte external hard drive into it and do the exact same thing too.
And changes coming with Android M will be perfect for that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's already pretty seamless in that I put a 64 gig micro SD card in the back of it. You can tell it to fill up 25, 50, 75, or 100% of that SD card with games. And after something installs, it'll check if there's room and automatically move it over there. You don't notice that the game has been moved or anything like that. It just plays right off the SD card. And then with that limitation, you can, you know, save the other 50% for local files or, you know, local movies, whatever you want to do. So cool. I think if you can spend twice the price of what you would go from $100 to $200, what you would normally spend on a box like that, it's a no-brainer. The like Android TV box to get, you know, you don't want to be stuck with something that's slow.
I think at this point Phil should buy one and then put Russell and I and all our LARP gear in a ring, and the winner gets to keep it.
You would lose, sir. I've been training my whole life for this.
I'll just get a lance and an electric steed.
All right, it's fixing grammar. There's incorrect grammar on the internet. Cancel the podcast. That's it. We're done.
Oh, we'll never podcast again.
Let's take one more break and then do some Q&A because I totally forgot about it. This microphone here is just throwing me off.
It sounds a lot better clipped onto that mic than it did on your desk, though.
Well, good. I'm a lot closer to it now.
It's like a magic mic.
Only Russell laughed. God, I hate you guys sometimes.
I laughed because I have myself muted.
I'm not going to dance. All right, hang on. We'll be right back. All right, we all know that shaving can be a pain. It can be uncomfortable. It can cause razor burns and nicks. And on top of that, it's expensive. It is not a cheap proposition to scrape all this stubble off various places of our bodies. That's where Harry's comes in. For about half the price of other big branded blades, Harry's will ship you free to your front doorstep razors that work well. They're great quality, and they are so much less expensive than other brands. And how good are they? Harry's liked the quality of the blades so much that they were getting, they bought the entire factory in Germany. Why would you ever pay $32 for an 8-pack ever again? It's half the price at Harry's. And with Harry's, you'll get a better shave that respects your skin, face, legs, and even your wallet. No more poor quality blades, and no more of those pesky plexiglass cabinets to unlock either. The starter set is an amazing deal. For $15, you get a razor, moisturizing shave cream, and 3 razor blades. And with promo code AC, you can get $5 off that. So it's an amazing deal. We all need razors and shave well and don't suck. For me, even though I don't shave every day because I have this luxurious beard now, you just need a little bit of, you know, upkeep every day or two, however often you want. And that makes it even better using Harry's because I'm not paying that much money for something I'm not necessarily using every day. Plus, it's shipped right to my door. I mean, you can't stress how much easier that is. So go to harrys.com right now, and Harry's will give you $5 off. Again, that's coupon code AC for $5 off your first purchase. Start shaving better today. Okay, Q&A time.
Which, how quiet I was.
Yeah, thank you. The one thing that's worked right this week. I appreciate that. Matt says, happy birthday, Jerry, belatedly.
Thank you, Matt. I had a wonderful birthday.
What'd you do yesterday? I didn't ask.
I stayed around the house, played PlayStation in my underwear, had the kids come over, my wife cooked my favorite meal.
That's like every Thursday.
Well, kind of. Except this year there was expensive bourbon in pretty wrapped boxes from my kids. So this Thursday was great.
Fair enough. Well, happy birthday. I can't sing you the birthday song because we'd get arrested or something by ASCAP. Andrew wants to know, have you guys gotten to try out Hound by SoundHound yet? Any initial thoughts, perhaps, compared to Google Now, Alexa, Siri, Cortana, etc.? What is Sound, Russell?
Hound is another attempt at a voice assistant made by the guys who do SoundHound, who have gotten really, really good at listening to music and telling you what that music is. But they don't do a whole lot else. And as a result, you have a voice assistant that is really, really good at taking instructions and exactly that. The demonstrations that we've seen and the demonstrations that I've, the test that I've put it through, it's super good at taking strings of instructions. I can say, what's the weather in Pensacola? And then give me the stocks for this and then do two or three other things. And it will, in sequential order, give me all of those things without skipping a beat. Very impressive to see it do that. But the search isn't great. It runs on Bing for search. It doesn't integrate very well with some of the other stuff that's happening on my phone. It is definitely not as smart as Google Now or Cortana, let alone, you know, being able to keep up with Siri as far as local stuff goes. It's a beta. I'm not going to judge it yet, but it is definitely not there yet. It does one thing really, really well, and it makes for an impressive demo, but not a whole lot else.
Fair enough.
There should be an invite in your email, Phil.
Yes, there is.
So I just can play with
all the things I've wasted time on today that has not been
one. I just want you to break that, too.
Christopher says, do you think HTC's, quote, hero product will be something along the lines of a second-gen HTC One Max, or will it be more of a One M9++? I mean, by the way, I don't think we've done a story on it, but Cher Wang, you know, the head honcho at HTC, it has never actually been, you know, Peter Chow. He's always had a boss, and it's Cher, and she's pretty awesome, by the way. This week told investors, hey, not doing as good as we would have liked. Again, and it looks like they're going to break their four-quarter string of profits, which sucks, but it happens, I guess. And they said, look, we're going to put out some, you know, cool new stuff later this year, which I take to mean a new Desire phone, which, by the way, that got me thinking, especially as we've done more with unlocked devices here in the past month or so. How do we not have a properly available unlocked HTC Desire whatever?
They've just never pushed the Desire phones in North America in the same way, the same way that they have in Eastern Europe and Asia.
Which is too bad. I mean, we've got the Desire I here on AT&T as well, and they're not cheap phones. They're not, you know.
Yeah, and there's been a couple of Desires before, but we're talking about there's a new Desire every couple months in Asia.
Yep. So I don't know.
And it's interesting because HTC is really good about selling unlocked versions of its flagships in the U.S.
Yeah, it should totally do that with the Desire. I like them in many ways a little more than the M9 or even
throw
the M8. They're different phones. But
make it available on Amazon. Just, you know, do saw Asus. Just do it just fine.
Speaking of which, and we should have talked about it a little bit earlier, I guess, but the Huawei P8 Lite is now available for $249, which is a
L-I-T-E,
lowercase. It's a really good post, or a really good post, really good price for a pretty decent phone that's running Android 4.4.4, which is entirely unacceptable in June 2015. That is not okay at all.
That's enough for me to say don't buy it.
Yeah, I mean, it's enough for me to say that too, and which is a shame because the rest of the phone's not horrible. Even if you get over Huawei's, you know, screw UI, which isn't for me, but you know, whatever. But I just, on principle, I cannot say, yes, buy this phone. You know, never mind that most people won't know the difference between 4, 4, and 5. That's not the point.
And the unfortunate part is that we saw on the full-size P8 that the software doesn't get much better when you talk about Lollipop.
Which might have been the problem.
Might have been the issue. They just said, well, it's not being received well there, so we'll just stick with KitKat. But it's just kind of crazy that this phone is developed running KitKat.
Especially when it has Google services. There must be something going on for Google to have said, oh, yeah, don't worry about it. It's fine.
Especially when 5.0 got lighter and easier to run on lower-end devices as well.
Yeah, something's weird. But anyway, it's available. We've got a lot more coming on unlocked devices soon. I think I want to do some more. So yeah, I mean, do I think it'll be a giant one? No. You know what I've been thinking a lot about in the past week though is fingerprint scanners. Speaking of the One Max, because it had one. Yeah. But as Google brings forth all this new code for supporting fingerprint scanners, I think some of that's in deference to Samsung. Sure.
I mean, I'm just going to like the fact that that something like the GS6 is going to have way more apps that can be unlocked and, you know, hand off credentials with a fingerprint scanner. Well, right now, somebody has to target that phone specifically.
We need to be clear here. Google's not supporting actual fingerprint scanner hardware. They just have new things you can do once you acquire a fingerprint.
Okay.
We haven't
you can use it to unlock credentials right. and move them around between apps.
The same thing that Samsung does in their apps, Google wants to make system-wide.
Gotcha.
But they don't have a method yet to capture a fingerprint publicly.
And so the way that it works on the S6 or the Note 4 or whatever is that somebody has to write their app. Like you can open up a Keeper, EnPass, there's a few different password managers. They've been written specifically for those devices to work with Samsung's API to be able to recognize a fingerprint that's stored in the system already. This is going to be that, but for Android device built into Android rather than Samsung's Android.
We're going to assume that Google and Samsung got together on this, and once Samsung devices are running Android M, it's just going to use the standard Google methods. But developers are still going to need to address the Samsung way for phones that are here now and until they get updated.
Christopher also asked, do you think the HTC stood still for a year criticism is warranted, or does HTC just like the resources for a major redesign every year? I think everybody likes the resources for a major redesign every year. I mean, should you blow up what generally has been working each and every year? I don't think you should. And sitting in a room with those guys, I would not in a million years say, they just sat on their asses and they didn't do anything.
Well, I mean, my 2014 Jeep looks just like the 2013 Jeep. Does that mean it's not good?
And I mean, I remember how much crap that Samsung got moving from the GS3 to GS4 for the same exact reason.
Yeah.
And you know that they have the resources to do a blow-up redesign every year.
I think it's a lazy narrative by reviewers who are bored and have a hard time, it's so much easier to complain about something, and when there's nothing new to complain about, what's left?
If you make a design change that everybody loves, you want to get the mileage out of that design change and continue to use it.
The M9 is not on the top of my list of phones I would recommend right now, but that doesn't mean it's a bad phone. That doesn't mean it was a phone that was half-assed. It doesn't mean it was a phone that no work was put into, because that's just not how it works. If you see anything behind the scenes in this industry, or, crack open a phone sometime. Find an old phone, break it, and open it up, and then tell me no work goes into that. Tell me no work goes into the hardware, and then meet the people who have to make the software work with the hardware, and tell me no work goes into that. It's asinine, and I really, really hate that narrative, because it's insulting to the people who did. It's insulting to me writing about it a little bit. So ask me how I really feel.
Jason Brown has a question, though. Not asking you about your feelings.
Yes.
He says, how quick will USB-C show up on Android devices, the next Nexus?
I bet so.
Yeah,
easily see it there.
We saw a
feature of Android M. You're going to have to put it in the phone that debuts the operating system.
A bunch of new Asus tablets and phones came out this week at Computex, where the Brits were, and one of them is running USB-C. So, it's what's next.
It's just going to be the new thing, and the component to get USB-C is just going to start getting cheaper and cheaper as it hits scale, and then it's just going to be the new thing.
David says, I'm going to be moving from my M8 to an LG G4 in very short order based on your recommendations. I was wondering what the best app to back up and restore without root is. What do we do for that now? It's been a long time since I dealt with that.
Tough it out.
So much of what I do. Yeah.
No.
Russell's like, no, you guys are wrong.
Carbon backup still like actually works without root now. It's pretty much the app to use for that sort of thing if you don't want root. If you have root, then Titanium Backup is still, I think, a more complete service. But if you're not using root, Carbon works. You just have to do it. You have to pay really close attention to what you're doing. Back it up off of your device. Back it up to, like, I think you can back it up to Google Drive. And then you can pull it back down onto your new device. But Carbon should work fine.
And then should maybe we yell at our developers for not using proper cloud save in some form or another?
Yeah.
That's pretty much it. I mean,
all of them.
I mean, the nice thing is that coming in M, it's just going to brute force it.
Yeah.
Right. If a developer does nothing, it will back up automatically.
Yay!
Which is that way too many years.
Is that only for apps built against the MSDK?
Yes. You will need to target the right API level.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not going to... Yeah.
So... yeah, there's still going to be some work there. I don't know. Maybe you think Google's going to crack down on that now that they're approving apps more actively? As Jerry and Andrew refuse to answer the question by muting their phones.
Well, I had to take a cough drop.
Oh.
Crack down is maybe a harsh word, but I think they're going to push developers to do things the right way a little more than they have in the past.
Hope so.
That's a nicer way of saying the same thing.
Well, and I guess it's not necessarily a crackdown, just asking them to target the new the new API level and then just doing it for them.
Yeah.
I mean, all it's doing is that as soon as you target M with your app, it's not like you have to redesign user-facing stuff. You target M, you make it compliant with those APIs, and... once every 24 hours when your phone's charging and on Wi-Fi, it just backs up all that app data into an encrypted file in Google Drive.
And this doesn't mean that, oh, developers will have to build an app that only works with Android M. That's not what that means.
Right.
Your apps will still work.
Between Gingerbread and,
right.
and M.
But it will do this on phones that are running Android M. All three of them.
Mark asks, with Google Photos, where does this leave Picasa?
Dead where it should have been, like,
where it's been all this time?
I mean, just one and a half feet in the grave?
Picasa's not allowed to die until Google finishes that Linux desktop client they promised 5.5 years ago.
Yeah, sure.
Then Picasa's allowed to die. Hey, I'm going to latch onto that forever.
Yeah, but I mean, Picasa was... completely gutted to make Google Plus Photos, which then turned into Google Photos. I see no reason to continue using Picasa other than the small amount of time it takes to relearn the way Google Photos does things.
Picasa's desktop app felt like it was more powerful than Google Photos, but I think we've just switched a lot of the decisions and power up to the cloud instead of on our personal computer. So right. I think it's equal in function.
Let's see. Mitch says, missed the start of the show. Did Phil change his office? Yes. I used to be in that corner, right there, facing that corner. Now I'm facing the parking lot of Doom. And they just planted a new tree outside my window, so that could get interesting after a while.
What kind of tree?
I'm not sure. Almost look like a dogwood, maybe? I'm not sure.
Oh, that'd be pretty.
I don't know trees. John Paul asks, on Android M, I don't want my data connections to turn off when my phone is sitting on my desk. I want my notification in real time. What are your thoughts?
See, I told you people.
Plug it into the charger. The answer is to plug your phone into your charger.
Yeah.
I mean, if it's on the charger, behavior is totally normal. If it's on battery and it's sitting, as of right now, understanding that Doze is not finished, it will fall asleep and enter that deep sleep pattern until it moves again.
She has a good question about photos. Where'd it go? There it is. What if I delete a photo from my phone's camera folder via a different gallery app? Will it delete from cloud also?
Not if it's already backed up. So Google Photos, so you take one picture, it's uploaded to Google Photos. Once it's uploaded, Google doesn't have any kind of link in that way. So you can delete the local copy. And it actually, when your phone storage gets low, if you have a lot of photos, Google Photos, the app on your phone, will actually suggest that you delete your local copies and will actually give you a one-touch clear out all of the local copies of those photos, because once they're backed up, they're still available. If you have an internet connection, they're cached to recent ones, and you can still access them anyway.
We've seen, there was another phone that did that, and I forget.
Which, by the way, is definitely confusing to people.
Yeah. Anyway, Christopher asks, with HTC now implementing some reportedly quality fingerprint sensors, do you think fingerprint scanners will show up in the majority of next year's flagships, especially with baked-in support at the OS level? I mean, do you guys think we're going to see more?
I hope so, because I actually have come to really appreciate the one on the S6 Edge. It's just, you know, it's convenient. By the time I have my finger on, the phone, it is unlocked and where I want it to go.
I kind of love the idea of a fingerprint scanner right there.
I could dig that if it's a press sensor and not a passive scanner like we've seen on other phones, or worse, a swipe scanner. You can get right out of town with that nonsense.
Yeah, those were no good at all.
It needs to be the same kind of sensor that we have in the S6 Edge or the iPhone 6. Those both work remarkably well, and you're going to have to work pretty hard to convince me that anything else is just as good.
Jean-Paul asks, Android Open Accessory 2.0 car stereo for less than $200 or Android Auto for $800? I recently learned about Android Open Accessory 2.0, which lets you control the music on your phone with your stereo. It really depends on how much else you want to do, I guess. I mean, honestly, if the money's an issue and space is an issue, like for Jerry with, you know, not being able to have a doubled in stereo, then yeah, get something with good Bluetooth and you're a long ways there. I think at the very least, if you can get your phone out of your hands when you take phone calls, that's a huge deal. That's my answer.
Yeah, I mean, that's the one product where if you're asking whether or not the price is actually worth it, then the answer is no. Because you either don't get the cost of car stereos, or you're only planning on using it for one or two things. And there's nothing wrong with those two answers. You know, if you don't care that much about, you know, your car audio or the features that happen in your car, that's fine. I certainly don't. The only car thing that I really absolutely love is a backup camera. The rest of it I can either, you know, enjoy or do without. But, you know, it's not, we can't look at Android Auto the same way that we look at the other parts of Android. It just doesn't make sense.
Yeah. Adal says, I saw an article saying LG is planning to unlock the G4 bootloader. Generally, manufacturers and carriers stop software updates for flagship phones after 2 years. As a courtesy to customers, can they release a patch to unlock the bootloaders, which helps the mod community? I mean, they can do whatever they want, generally, but I don't know, it feels like we don't hear as much screaming about that as we used to.
My international, UK international G4 has a developer option to allow OEM unlocking.
Really?
Yes. So I think it's more than just a rumor. I think it's more than just a rumor. It's actually going to happen.
Oh, like the same one that's in Nexus options?
Yes.
Not really. I didn't even think to look. The one I'm holding here does too.
My issue here is, you know, Sony did something similar, and then you lost some of the features
audio
on the phone.
Went away. Camera went away.
I will bet we lose out on the camera once we can unlock the bootloader, and that will make me very, very sad.
Yeah, because the camera on this thing is exceptional, truly exceptional. And that stuff is proprietary, and it's not LG proprietary. It's stuff that LG buys from other places.
Who are saying, no, you're not going to allow people to use it if they don't have the security where they can't steal it.
In 2015, I mean, that's just become even less important to me. But I get that it's still out there and still important to a lot of people. But it's interesting. I'd be curious to see numbers on that.
I would like to be able to take some of the LG World software off of this phone, and that would require me to root it. But I don't want to take it off so badly that I'll lose the camera. I just won't unlock the bootloader if that's going to be the case.
She has a good question for Andrew. How do I find the photos that are just on my device in Photos, or should you use it for that?
So you can do it. If you swipe in on the side panel, you can go to device folders, and you can actually see what's physically, for lack of a better term, on the device, not just on the cloud.
But you've also been talking a lot about how this isn't really a gallery replacement.
Right. So what you can do is you can also check those boxes here to show, like, I turned off auto-uploading of screenshots because I take a lot of screenshots for work and I don't want them all up there. But really, it's best to interface with this in the main photos view, not necessarily looking at just what's on your device, because, you know, that's where you get the value of seeing everything. You know, you could have taken one picture on your camera and uploaded it, and you want to see that right next to the one you took on your phone an hour later in the same day. Unfortunately, right now, like I said, it doesn't work well as a straight up gallery replacement. I think they still have a lot of device by device compatibility things to work out to where I'd be comfortable setting it as a default gallery. Right now, it doesn't even work as a default gallery as well as the old photos did that was part of Google Plus. So it's not really meant to just show you your local photos. And even if you did set it as your default gallery, it still wouldn't be a good choice for that, simply because you know, you want to see everything rather than just what's local. And like I said, you can delete the local copies and they're still available through the Photos app anyways. So really, that's just a double checking, you know, has this one been backed up? Has this one not? You know, if you want to compare and contrast, or if you want to, like, turn off auto upload of your Instagram folder or something, which I turn off as well. So that's where those live and you can access them. But yeah, it's really not a full gallery replacement yet because of that.
Patrick, who I have to assume is a good Irish lad, maybe, or somewhere around there, or did I just insult an entire island again?
You know, I'm not going to make a joke.
Somebody got mad about the Canadian holidays thing the other week. That was
unnecessary.
Yeah. Did that change your opinion on Canadian holidays when people got mad at you?
Yes, absolutely it did.
See?
Yeah.
I've Phil seen now that. Observes.
I am so glad. I'm so glad I told everybody to harass you endlessly.
Now. I have seen the error of my ways. I don't even remember what I said.
His Google Calendar shows the official holidays from like 70 nations.
Well, now. Isn't there like 26 hockey days in Canada?
Oh my God! So Patrick says my meat search is showing pictures of sheep, which I don't remember taking. Mm. Nice and presumptuous from Google. That's going to go wrong so many ways.
I'm not saying a word.
I actually got a lot of I got a lot of meat, but also one of ice cream and one of shrimp flavored chips.
Is it ew, flavored ew. Ice cream?
Oh,
I've learned something terrible about Andrew's eating habits today.
No, it's a huge thing in Japan. Fish flavored crisps and chips and things.
It's also a huge thing in Japan and Andrew's apartment.
Yeah. So I'm trying to see. Yeah, it actually did a pretty good job. Also, a picture of a dairy aisle in a grocery store. So I guess that's pretty close. But yeah, two of ice cream. I don't think that's not necessary.
It comes from meat.
True. And then also donuts. But they did a pretty good job. Like, even there's a plate of pancakes with bacon on the side, so there you go.
Andrew Schaefer brings up a good point, and this is something I actually just turned back on a minute ago. I could swear I've turned it on 5 times now. But it's worth noting that there's a setting in the Photos app to automatically remove location from photos that are shared via a link.
No.
Very important.
Yes. And you can, of course, do that on the device side before you upload as well.
Yeah, I did a quick post, I think, last week on the G4's got that as a top-level option in the gallery, which I thought was brilliant and everybody needs to do. I mean, you can remove it on the GS6, but you've got to go into the gallery and then into the image and then, you know, edit some other metadata in there. It's not difficult. It's just not as high-level and as easy. But kudos for LG for the way they did it, I think.
And, I'm just saying, as long as you're very smart about that, there are lots of times where you do want to have the location information available.
Yep.
And if you can easily remove it, you know, you can't easily go back and add it. So, you know, you can think about that.
Yeah, well, you can in these gallery apps, actually. They make it just as easy to add location with, you know, Google Maps.
But then you add location and then you're moving a pin around and saying where it was rather than spontaneously having it exactly where you were.
Sure.
I have taken so many pictures of beer.
I did notice that when I got one, I searched for Amsterdam to pull up all my vacation photos from Amsterdam, and I got a lot of Heineken pictures from throughout the world. So they're pretty smart about that.
The first body part I got to show up was finally it wasn't elbow. It was feet, but it was missing one that I know is in there, and that's me soaking my feet in a bathtub full of ice. My very first CES. Yeah.
I was concerned for you about that.
Oh, I was in pain that trip. That was, wear comfortable shoes if you ever go to CES.
Oh, wow. Yeah, beer did give a lot of results, huh? And some wine. See, they got to work on this.
John Paul said, Phil's wife is pretty hot. I am inclined to agree, sir, and thank you. See, why do people think I'd take offense to that? My wife is hot. Go tell her. S. Nickinson on Twitter. Go tell her husband thinks she's hot.
This is going to backfire so bad. Phil, stop talking.
She's going to be like, what have you done? Andrew, what pictures? Oh, my God. I think Andrew just shared us a picture in Slack of a canine centipede.
No, I'm saying that was the one picture that came up with the when you search for butt. It was my cat sleeping right on my dog's butt.
Dear, that cat's doing more than sleeping. Just make that go away. Delete that.
He just likes to sleep in precarious positions.
I'm going to search for butt one more time. Nothing comes up. I'm surprised.
And I'll show you the shrimp-flavored chips, too.
No, please don't. No, I'm okay.
Andrew needs to share that on Google Plus so everybody can see. Let's all demand we see the shrimp-flavored.
I make fun of shrimp-flavored chips, but my wife found a bag of Old Bay-flavored cheese curls.
Ooh.
And let me tell you, as terrible as that sounded until the bag opened, I was a fat man all over again. It was
definitely not the case with shrimp-flavored chips.
You used to be able to buy Old Bay Fritos, and I would have that stuff smeared everywhere.
I mean, look, I've got two cans of Old Bay in my pantry, but I'm not going to eat it on chips. I might put it on fries, actually.
The Cheetos are good.
Gerardo has a good question, actually, that I can sort of semi-answer, and I know Jerry can. During Google I.O., were there any mentions of Chrome OS for business purposes, like a point-of-sale station with credit card applications? No, but Jerry knows where I'm going.
Yep.
Go. Android at Work had a bunch of like kiosk-type updates. And in fact, it's in go read the API thing that Jerry wrote, and I think I slipped a mention or two of the kiosks in there, some of the automatic update stuff. And so, I mean, they're very much looking at that as an Android-based sort of thing and not just Chrome OS / web browser. And that kind of makes sense, I think.
And we have to remember, Chrome is, because you can log in with a Google Apps account, it's centralized managed anyway. They're probably going to talk more about Chrome somewhere later this year.
Well, we talked about this a few weeks back where Russell had really good points about using it as an advertising board or, a check-in counter at an airport or something like that, you know, especially with things like the Chrome bit coming up where you just plug it into an HDMI port and now you have a
OS
system.
And Chrome OS already has a sort of a rudimentary kiosk mode that you can use now. So I expect to hear more about how we can merge more Chrome features into the enterprise in all ways. Hopefully sometime in the near future, because nothing was said that we all were wanted and expected to hear.
No, Andrew, I'm not clicking on that. Oh, damn it. Ugh.
I know. Ugh. I told you it's a thing. So you can go into these places that are like bulk foods, you know, where you just get them by the pound, and you can get like any kind of sea life flavored chips.
Tokyo. I'm stealing your picture, and then I'm going to do a search of Andrew's apartment, and I guarantee.
No, I don't have any in the cabinet right now, but that picture is from 2012, taken with a Galaxy Nexus. So that'll tell you it's that easy to find a picture that's over 3 years old.
Blake Mead asks, what does Doze mean for Mead, not meat? What does Doze mean for notifications on Android? Where are my apps not going to notify me on my Moto 360 while Doze is enabled?
Nope, they won't.
But you know what they will notify you on? Your Wi-Fi enabled Android Wear device.
Very true. Good job. Beat me to it.
Well, actually, will they?
Yeah. Because it's still
tied into the notifications of your phone, though, and the phone's not receiving a notification.
But that changes when you hook your Android Wear device up to Wi-Fi. It syncs in the cloud instead of on your phone, or it can.
But I think it's still pulling the information from the phone.
We'll find out.
It's just facilitating a different link. So
what happens when you put Android M on your Android Wear enabled device and it goes into dozing too? Then nothing happens. You're like cut off from the entire world. You need to learn to make fire with two rocks.
You know what I want is I do want, as somebody that has multiple Android Wear watches, I want them, if they've been sitting on the table for hours, to also doze off and stop notifying me of things when they're sitting on the table.
I just dozed off a minute ago. That's what we were laughing at.
You know what I would really like is for Android Wear with Wi-Fi support to come to my Android Wear watch. Looking at you, Motorola.
Citing performance issues.
This is going to be sad. I'm going to cry.
Shocker, the Moto 360 doesn't have good performance.
I might as well just start looking for a new Android Wear watch. I hear the Zen Watch 2 is pretty nice.
You want to hear some really weird search?
It's too shiny for me, Andrew. I don't think I'm going to like that watch.
I know.
You're going to like the Huawei watch. Here are two really weird searches.
Hey, I told you guys about the Huawei watch being the one to get how many months ago? I'm just saying, Phil, don't take the credit for that.
I'm just saying, seeing Dave Burke with it on was pretty cool. So it looked good.
My recommendation is worth nothing to Phil.
I might have saw a couple people at Google with a new wearable on their wrist from a company we know and love and haven't seen yet.
Oh, that's true. You mentioned that to me.
Yep.
Gasp.
It had something along the words of prototype and Motorola right on the side of it. So...
It's a shame you didn't have, like, a camera sitting in your lap or anything.
It's a shame. I respect those gentlemen enough not to be taking snappy, creepy photos of their wrists. Come on, man.
Break exclusive!
It's just a really tight crop. You wouldn't be able to tell whose wrist it was, at least. Just
I don't know, man. With Google Photos, we might know pretty quickly whose wrist it was.
I recognize that cluster of...
If you search for wrists, I guess.
I guess we should probably wrap this up because who knows how it's going to sound and how much work I'm going to have to do on it. But at least we have a good podcast title. Hooray! I keep looking over this mixer and just giving it that stink eye.
Mm. It's all the mixer's fault, I'm sure.
I'm sure it is. No, I'm pretty sure it's the software. The mixer was working great. Anyway, what's going on with us the next few weeks? I mean, we're all home. Alex and Richard are going to be back soon. Alex will have plenty to talk about, or not. He might just be done with it all.
I quit everything.
Screw you guys. Hey, WWDC is next week, so you know Apple is going to totally spew forth truth and virtue and not talk crap about any other company that might potentially be doing things better than it is.
You know what? Screw Apple. I'm not even watching it this year. I'm getting tired of that. Who's with me? Phil, that's where you say, Jerry, you don't have to watch this year. And I go, yay!
Okay, but I'll find plenty of other work for you to do. You can come over and fix my mixer.
I can do it.
So we got that. We've got more series coming up on all sorts of things. So anything fun? What are you guys working on?
Google Photos. If you couldn't tell, I've been spending some time with Google Photos.
Russell and I and Jen, have we introduced Jen to the
world? We've not really.
Oh, yeah.
But we're going to be talking about Google Cardboard a little bit next
week.
And then the week after, I've got all your Pebble Time, anything you wanted to know about the Pebble Times coming, because we just got ours yesterday.
About time.
There are other smartwatches.
Yep.
Okay. Well, as we are every week, we are brought to you by ShopAndroid.com. Whole bunch of cool Tech Armor stuff coming in the store. If you haven't seen them, really good stuff. Go check that out. What else we got going on? Maybe should we start playing Periscope some? I did one from like lunch last Saturday because my kid was just being annoying or whatever, so I put her on the internet, which in retrospect, probably not the coolest thing for Dad to do, but I didn't care.
I don't think Android Central has like a Periscope account yet.
No, we don't. I should probably do that like immediately.
Or perhaps a Meerkat account. We need to decide which is which.
Somebody should do that now before some Yahoo a-hole in the listening live right now does
oh,
it for us.
Oh, man. That's right.
Russell, hey, guess what your job is before you knock
I don't know how to do that.
Russell has a new job.
Everything is hard.
Would anybody watch if I periscoped me sitting in the dirt along the bank of a lake drinking beer and not catching catfish?
Because I guarantee I'll you they it. Would, yes. I guarantee you they would.
I sometimes I fall asleep and you all can laugh at that.
All right, so go follow us on all that stuff. Follow us on Instagram as well. We are still having fun posting things there. Usually it's me or Andrew, sometimes Alex. But try to figure out who's who, I guess. Follow us on the YouTubes. Subscribe to the feeds. Hey, by the way, if you didn't notice, go download our app because it just passed 1 million total subscribers, which is awesome. Or downloaders, users, whatever. Which is pretty freaking awesome.
Oh, that teaser you put up in the app beta group on Google Plus was, that's going to be cool too.
Yes, finally. Should we say what it is?
Yeah, go ahead.
I mean, there are lots of finally, like, oh my God, you guys finally just got that. But yeah, Samsung multi-window support is finally coming. So we just.
And it works really well.
How about that?
I can watch HBO while pretending to work.
Great. Glad we did that for you there. But no, glad that's finally getting in there. How many instances of our app could you open? You can still just do one instance at a time, right?
Just the one, yeah.
But you could open up, like, on Samsung's tablets, you could do, like, all the Mobile Nations apps.
I haven't tested tablets yet. I have a special secret multi-window Android M test that I have to do first.
What? Okay.
Periscope it.
I may, in fact, Periscope it if I can do this.
And during this entire podcast, for everybody watching, I've been over there installing Windows 8.1, getting ready for Windows 10. Yes, that's a TV, just because I rearranged my office. And
so you don't have enough screens available.
I don't. Well, yeah, it goes back into this whole podcast thing and see how it works. I don't know. One thing at a time. All right, that's it for this week. Thank you for watching and listening and joining us. And it'll be weird and crazy again next week, I promise. So, Jerry, Andrew, Russell, thank you guys as well.
Thank you.
And we'll see you next week.
Yay.
Bye-bye.
Adios.
Meat search.
Has to be the podcast title. Looking for meat.
Yep.
Looking for meat in all the wrong places.
Oh, no.